Thank you very much. Thank you. Thanks very much indeed. Thank you. Thanks very much. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thanks very much indeed, everyone. Everything's okay. Yeah. Thank you very much indeed. Okay, thank you. Thank you for that very warm welcome. And thank you for the faithful work each and every one of you have been engaged in over the past year. Just in case there's anybody from the Alliance Party in Belfast here, could we see those flags again? When we last met at conference, we celebrated a resounding assembly victory, having won more seats than at any time in our history. And as you can see, we are not done yet. Over the past 12 months, opinion polls have shown DUP support continuing to increase. The last published poll showed our support has risen, while the Ulster Unionist Party's support has fallen. And we have still a year and a half until the next election. So let me welcome all the new members who have joined the party, whether they have come to us from other parties or arrived fresh and ready to make a contribution in this new era of Northern Ireland politics. For we stand on the verge of a defining period for unionism. The siege is lifted, the troubles as we knew them are over, and the constitutional debate has been won. A century ago this autumn, our forefathers overcame the greatest crisis which ever faced unionism. And in this decade, I believe that we have been presented with unionism's greatest opportunity. And this time, our purpose isn't to defeat, but by words and deeds to persuade. Having failed to convince people back here of the value of a united Ireland, Gerry Adams, like the undead from a B-movie, roams around the globe lecturing people about the creation of a united Ireland. But democratic unionists want to use their power of persuasion right here at home where it matters to expound the benefits of belonging to the Union. That means challenging ourselves as well as challenging others. And it means building a society where everyone feels equally valued. In promoting the benefits of the United Kingdom, unionists have a product that none of our political opponents can match. This autumn, other political parties have used their conferences to debate opposition, to criticise their political opponents, and sometimes their so-called friends, and to decry what Northern Ireland has achieved. Today, I want to take a different approach. I want to talk about the union, about jobs, about programme delivery, and about reconciliation. I want to focus as much as possible on a vision of hope, of progress, of optimism and accomplishment, a future built on advancement, on prosperity, and on positive politics. As other parties look inward, we must look outward and beyond our normal horizons. This has been an historic year. We have celebrated and commemorated the generation of Ulster men and women whose bravery in 1912 maintained our British citizenship when it faced its most serious threat. Those were defining days for unionism and for the Union. They made us what we are today. But the era we are living through will, I believe, when future generations look back, prove to be equally important. The 40-year campaign to wrench us from the Union may be over, but the new equilibrium has not yet been fully established. Few generations face the defining moments that confronted our forefathers a century ago. A few, I suspect, will find that there are no similar opportunities available than those that we have today. That past generation of Unionists saved the Union and ensured the creation of Northern Ireland. This generation of Unionists, yes, our generation, has the opportunity to reshape politics and guarantee Northern Ireland's place in the United Kingdom for centuries to come. As the leaders of Unionism today, our responsibility is to hand this province on to those who come after us in better shape than when we inherited it. We in this party are the custodians of Unionism. My goal as leader is to lay the groundwork that will cement our place within the Union. If that means taking tough decisions or abandoning outdated dogmas, then I'll do it. Because the essence of our success has been and will be that of remaining true to our enduring values, but doing so in a way that is relevant to this modern world. This isn't a time for easy contentment about what we've already achieved. Rather, it's time to fire ourselves with ambition about what more we can do. In an age when politics is too often seen as being about the small or the trivial, let the peace and prosperity of Northern Ireland be our driving ambition. We mustn't be influenced in the task that we have set ourselves by the ups and downs of the 24-hour news cycle, only by the perspective of history. The economic difficulties that we face today are tough, but they'll pass, and in time our province will emerge stronger than ever. On the 28th of September 1912, our forefathers came as one to sign the Ulster Covenant, and in the following 10 years, they shaped what became Northern Ireland for the decades that followed. So too in this generation will these next few years shape our province well into the 21st century. This month, we remembered once again those who died in the service of our country. And in just 4 years' time, we will commemorate the centenary of the supreme sacrifice at the Battle of the Somme. Some people say that we live in a selfish and pampered generation, and they wonder whether we have people today who would be as prepared to make the same kind of sacrifice for their country and community. I have no doubts. I look back over that long formation of brave Ulster men and women who faced terrorism over recent decades, and in that same tradition, in defence of country and community, gave up that most sacred gift, their own lives. This month, during one of the saddest weeks of my term as First Minister, I attended the funerals of Channing Day and of David Black. Lives lost in the service of others. Words cannot erase the pain that their families and friends are feeling, but we are humbled by their sacrifice. Both at home and halfway around the world, these people chose to serve their country. Nothing can bring them back, but no one can erase the lives that they lived nor the service they have given. And just as we remember those who died serving us all, let us also remember those who continue to serve, whether it is here or abroad. Their extraordinary work allows each of us to live normal lives, and we honour all of those heroes today. As a party, it's also right that we spend some time this afternoon in solidarity with one of our own, one who terrorists tried to murder, but due to his courage and adeptness, he survived. In spite of facing a hail of bullets and being shot several times, he managed, though injured, to shoot one of his would-be assassins before struggling to his vehicle and driving to the local police station, from where he was transferred to hospital. Not content with their failure to murder him, his home continues to be attacked, and he and his family face ongoing abuse. This recently reached a new low when councillors in the same council of which he is a valued member, in his presence, voted to have one of his would-be murderers released from jail. Conference, I ask you to rise and show support and solidarity with our colleague, our friend, Dungannon councillor Sammy Brush. Sammy, you and your family will continue to be in our thoughts and particularly our prayers. We cannot rewrite history, but we can add a new and better chapter to it. And the responsibility for that will fall to this party. The DUP has triumphed because it is united and because it is strong, because it looks to the future and not just to the past, and because it doesn't just say things to court a popular tide, but rather it says what it believes, and unlike many other political parties, it believes what it says. And although we have been very successful, we mustn't be smug or complacent. Just recall how quickly other parties have fallen from power. I don't need to warn anyone in this hall what division does to a party's prospects. I don't need to warn anyone in this hall because the DUP has always been as much a family as it is a political party. During the past decade, we have gone from strength to strength, not by closing our doors, but by welcoming in all those who share our outlook and values. And let me say tantalizingly, we're not finished bringing people into the party yet. Yeah. Those who have joined us have made us stronger, and in turn it has made unionism stronger. At every level, in council chambers, in the European Parliament, at Westminster and in Stormont, this party continues to serve the people of Northern Ireland. And I want to thank all of you who have contributed to the party's continuing success. As someone who's been in the DUP since its formation over 40 years ago, in good times and bad, when I look around today, I have never been more optimistic about the future of our party and of our province. This year, I've attended many mayoral installations, but they included three of our youngest council leaders: the Mayor of North Down, Wesley Irvine, the Mayor of Craigavon, Carla Lockhart, and of course the Lord Mayor of Belfast, Gavin Robinson. Guys, stand up, please. Come on. Come on. Well done. Gavin, Movember has an awful lot to answer for. I will personally buy the razor blade at the end of this month. You'll never win seats in East Belfast looking like a Mexican bandit. Our young people are a credit to this party, and they and their generation can ensure its success, not just for years, but for decades to come. It's the work of all of our elected representatives that has laid the foundation for our success. In Europe, Diane has been tremendous, not just for what she's achieved in the Parliament, but also for the work that she has done up and down the country with individuals and with groups. Our MP's work complements everything that our Assembly team is doing at Stormont. And when it comes to friendship and loyalty, I suspect that Mike Nesbitt and Alistair MacDonald could only dream of the level of support that I can rely on from Nigel. Our MPs are making their mark, doing a valiant job in the House of Commons. And with the Commons arithmetic, as it is at the present time, we're in a very strong position. At Stormont, we have the largest and undoubtedly the most talented team. That makes choosing executive ministers one of the toughest jobs that I have. And I want to pay tribute to the work of our ministerial team. Sammy, Arlene, Edwin, Nelson, and of course, Johnny. Thank you for the service that you give to this party and to the province. Together as a party, we have done extraordinary things over the past 10 years. For almost a decade now, this party has been entrusted with the leadership of unionism. And in that time, we have transformed the political map, restored devolution, and put Northern Ireland back on the right track. Even the undoubted economic problems don't alter the fact that at long last we can look towards a better future. And I don't need to remind you what it was like just a decade ago. Stormont stumbling from one suspension to the next, unionists divided and dispirited, the IRA still armed and active, defeatism and despair were commonplace. But today, we have the confidence of knowing that a majority of Protestants and Catholics alike support our constitutional position within the United Kingdom. They know they're better off with Britain. The one party that seems oblivious to the shifting sands of opinion is Sinn Féin. One of the most bizarre developments in recent times has been the Sinn Féin call for a border poll. Now, I know opinion polls are not a perfect gauge of public opinion, but when the last one showed that fewer than 10% wanted a united Ireland now, Republicans really should take the hint. Republicans asking for a border poll makes turkeys voting for Christmas look like a carefully considered strategy. As a unionist sure of the outcome of such a vote, it'd be easy to support a referendum. But that wouldn't make it the right thing to do. Because at the heart of the St Andrews Agreement was the knowledge and strength that what was agreed allowed politics in Northern Ireland to move away from issues about the existence of the border. What Sinn Féin is doing only drags us back into that sterile and divisive debate. Republicans need to accept Northern Ireland's constitutional status within the United Kingdom and leave the play-acting aside, just as unionists have had to accept the present arrangements at Stormont. Because power-sharing is not something that many unionists would have placed as their first preference. But the reality is that that cross-community government has increased support for the constitutional status quo in Northern Ireland. And understanding the significance of that trade-off is important as we plan for the future. It doesn't mean that every aspect of the present arrangement should be sacrosanct. It means that any new structures have to be able to command support across the community. It's not just my view. It's accepted, I think, by virtually every unionist politician. Now, I get frustrated when every time I suggest changes that could make Stormont work better, nationalist and Republican politicians accuse me of wanting to return to majority rule. It's as if they believe I'm hatching a cunning plan to return to the 1930s. Now, I've been around politics long enough to know that if any significant part of this community is disaffected, none of us wins. So I call on nationalists and Republicans who are fearful of change to look afresh at our political structures and ask themselves the question, what will best deliver for the people that we all represent. I say to them, even if you don't yet feel ready to create a voluntary coalition government, surely there can't be any reason not to provide for a credible voluntary opposition. I don't fear an opposition. Why should I? The DUP has by far the best and most able ministers, and there's no better ideas coming from any other party or member in the Assembly. In truth, I would prefer the Ulster Unionist Party to work alongside us in harmony and in partnership. But I am prepared to facilitate them, or indeed any other party, if they feel they cannot make a positive contribution in the executive and wish to opt for an opposition role. Let's be honest about it. Being in the executive has not prevented some of them from positioning themselves in opposition when it suited them. I forced myself to listen to Alistair MacDonald speak to his party faithful and some not so faithful. He attacked the executive for what it had done. He attacked the executive for what it hadn't done. He criticised the executive for its ideas, and he criticised the executive for not having any ideas. Now, what bemused me most was not just the nonsense he was uttering, but that he appeared to be completely unaware that his party is in the executive. In the SDLP's world, and maybe not theirs alone, they're in the executive when positive announcements are to be made, but they are found heading the opposition charge when hard decisions have to be taken. But let me make it clear, as the party that has consistently sought to improve the Assembly's structures, the DUP remains willing to support additional resources and speaking time for a genuine opposition as a modest first step towards normalisation of our democratic structures. Look, governing is never easy, and governing during a recession is particularly challenging. There are those who have nothing to contribute other than attacking others and attributing blame. But criticising the banks, our national government, the executive, or global capitalism doesn't amount to a strategy for recovery. Some politicians seem to think that their finest hour and achievement will be to pass the buck to save their own jobs, rather than to take the difficult decisions necessary to get the economy moving again and thereby saving other people's jobs. This party, sometimes virtually alone, has taken the difficult and responsible decisions while others have preferred to play politics. Make no mistake, although we will eagerly work with others, ours is the only party capable of giving leadership to Northern Ireland and giving leadership to unionism through the years that lie ahead. And we can only do that if we retain the confidence of those whom we serve. That'll mean challenging ourselves again and again. After all, we're not just the largest party within unionism. We're the party for Northern Ireland. So as unionists, we cannot afford to push a narrow agenda. We must embrace the whole community, because it is our responsibility to make Northern Ireland work. That means winning the battle of ideas, and it means making hard choices, not just the popular ones. It means being able to compromise when we need to in order to reach agreements, and it means standing firm when matters of principle are at stake. But above all, it means representing the whole community and not just one section of it. In a society that is as politically divided as ours, that's not always easy. However, I would argue that failing isn't the real crime when striving for a worthwhile goal. The real crime is not having the guts to try it in the first place. I admit, it is still a challenge to reconcile the future with the past and to reconcile one community with another. Some people still wonder, after all that has happened, how we can work with Sinn Féin. The answer's simple. It's really not about us. It's about making life better for the people that we represent. It sure is not always easy, but it is absolutely the right thing to do. Northern Ireland is stronger when we work both here at home and abroad, Because working together means working for every citizen of this province and getting things done. It means attracting foreign investment into Northern Ireland, and it means opening up new markets for our local businesses. Presenting a united face abroad, whether it's in the United States, India, or China, is the surest sign that the political stability exists for inward investment. It's a demonstration that as a society, we are moving forward. It's a signal to the world that politics works and that the peace we have achieved is here to stay. It's an indication that Northern Ireland is a place in which international business can safely place its money. And it's far better to have all of the main political parties in Northern Ireland committed to exclusively peaceful and democratic means. But working together doesn't mean agreeing on everything. It's about working through issues and finding the maximum degree of consensus that is possible. But while politics has made huge strides forward in Northern Ireland, every so often we are confronted with the horror of what was once an everyday occurrence. Now, while I welcome calls from the leadership of Sinn Féin to bring dissident murderers to justice, there are still some of their members who are stuck in the past. I see it as real progress, but I reject absolutely that there is any moral difference between those murdered by dissidents and those murdered during the Troubles. There has never been the slightest justification for 40 years of terrorism that blighted our province and divided our people. None of the problems in our society required a single life to be taken. And we will not permit Sinn Féin to erase those parts of history that are inconvenient for them. We'll not allow them to engage in revisionism. Recently, Declan Kearney, under a banner of reconciliation, sought to blame all the sins in Christendom on everyone other than Republicans. You'd have thought that the IRA had never existed. His personal and bitter unionist-hating rant exposed his intention to use the worthy goal of reconciliation to airbrush the evil acts of Republican terrorists from the history books. It would be a betrayal of the legacy of all who have suffered if history were to be written to salve the consciences of the perpetrators. Yeah, yeah.